So the third point is that we have this series of definitions which are offered by way of trying to give an account of the nature of holiness. Point four, no one of these accounts turns out to be successful. That is to say, no one of them works in the sense that no one of them withstands the questioning that Socrates puts to them and puts to Euthyphro about them. So Euthyphro offers, in response to Socrates' question, a series of suggestions as to what it is that we might call the essential nature of holiness. We'll see why I say that in a minute. But Socrates, by means of asking questions of Euthyphro, reveals the fact, well, here's an interesting question. What does he actually reveal? Does he reveal that Euthyphro doesn't, in fact, really understand the nature of holiness as he thinks he does? Does he reveal that none of the suggestions that Euthyphro makes is correct? And if he does, is there perhaps another suggestion that is correct and would have been right if Euthyphro had offered it? These are questions that I think are open questions that it will be interesting for us to worry about. But this much is clear, and it's the last point I want to make about these dialogues. The conversation ends aporetically. The word aporetic, which is used to describe Plato's early dialogues, is from the Greek aporia, which means perplexity. And so the dialogues end in the perplexity that apparently they began with. That is to say, it looks as though at the end of the dialogue, no clear solution to the problem that's offered emerges as the proper or correct solution. Now, each of these features of this dialogue and of other early Socratic dialogues may be found puzzling by us. Think first about the fact that they're looking for the definition of a concept. We might be inclined to say, well, if they want to know the definition of a word or a concept, why don't they just look it up in a dictionary? Or we might say even more radically, well, of course they already know what it means. How else could they know whether they were on the right track? That is to say, how could they disagree upon a correct or an incorrect account of some concept if they didn't already know, in some sense, what the concept is, and therefore have some understanding already of it? If I ask you to think about what sesquipedalian means and you offer me an account of sesquipedalian, which I then say, no, that's not right, or yes, that is right, it must be that I already know what it means. So in what sense could it be said that Socrates and Euthyphro don't already understand holiness if they're engaged in this kind of conversation about the correct account of it? What this reflection might make us realize is that it's not really, in a simple sense, a definition that they're looking for. Or if we want to say that it's a definition, we have to think about definition more literally. It is making more definite or more articulate an understanding that, in some sense, the two participants of the dialogue have to already have. Socrates claims to be looking, in other words, for something that we might think of as the real nature of the concept or entity that they, of course, understand. He is, we like to say, looking for the essence of holiness, the essential nature. Indeed, Socrates tells Euthyphro that he is after the essential form of holiness that makes all holy actions holy. What does that mean, the essential form of holiness that makes all holy actions holy? In one sense, it's very simple. It's what will come later to be called, both by Plato and Aristotle, the form of holiness. The form of a kind of thing or of a group of things that have some feature in common such that they constitute a kind is that by virtue of which they all have that feature. So the form of holy actions, then, is that by virtue of which they're all said to be holy.